You're listening to the BBC World Service. All this week, the BBC has been looking at issues of power around the world. Today, Bill Hayton reports on one of the most influential private networks of the rich and powerful, the Bilderberg Group. It's one of a number of such networks which bring together politicians and the leaders of global businesses. But how much power does it really have?
I'm in a baker's shop in the heart of London to think about how to rule the world. That might sound strange, but I'm following in the footsteps of the 18th century political economist Adam Smith. He used the example of a baker to argue that market forces were powerful enough to meet all of society's needs. The baker provides bread not out of charity, but out of self-interest. He makes a profit, and we get to eat. But look around this shop and you realise that this baker's future depends on a lot of things beyond his control. What happens if global warming affects wheat supplies? What if customers have less money to spend? Who would work here if labour regulations were changed? For the heads of multinational corporations, these kinds of questions have major implications. And Martin Wolf, associate editor of the Financial Times, says they need politicians to create the conditions for their businesses to thrive.
But at the most general level, business leaders want stability, they want open markets, they want a generally supportive environment, and usually they don't want to be bothered too much by the whole host of regulations and other things that come up through the political process.
There are many ways for business leaders to influence politicians and the world at large, by funding political parties or paying professional lobbyists, for example. But one of Europe's most successful business people, Viscount Etienne d'Avignon, has his own favourite.
I think small seminars are useful because the world doesn't limit itself to business and politics. You have research, which is important. You need to listen to people who are not confronted with the obligation of managing a daily operation. And so that you bring into the reflection also mid-term and longer-term preoccupations.
Viscount d'Avignon is chairman of possibly the most influential discussion network in the world, the Bilderberg Group. Few people have heard of it, largely because it does its best to avoid publicity. But in a rare interview, its chairman told me more about the group and its activities. Bilderberg's very discretion has fueled speculation about its real role and intentions. It's been described as a secretive cabal which pulls the world's strings, organises wars and elects and deposes political leaders. One of its fiercest critics is Jim Tucker, editor of a right-wing newspaper, the American Free Press.
When you're doing good, you do it in the sunshine. When you do evil, you do it in the darkness. For some reason, it's critical that the world not know what transpires behind those closed doors.
Viscount d'Avignon emphatically denies that and says the reason the group's meetings are private, he doesn't like the word secret, is purely to permit the discussion to be open and frank. I asked him what he thought about the conspiracy allegations.
I think that it is unavoidable and doesn't matter. What you can't avoid, you can't avoid. There will always be people who live in believing that there is a permanent conspiracy. There's no way in which you can argue them out of it, so you just have to bear with it.
So what exactly is the Bilderberg Group? Case van der Pyle of Sussex University in Britain and a critic of Bilderberg has traced its origins.
During World War II, there were many networks among exiled European statesmen and businessmen in London who, of course, had little else to do but planned for the post-war situation. And it's interesting to see that the people who launched Bilderberg were mostly recruited from this network, which again surfaces in the early 50s to deal with the then opening up gap between the Atlantic powers in how to deal with the death of Stalin and the new leadership in the Soviet Union, etc.
The first meeting of this network took place in 1954 at the Bilderberg Hotel in the Netherlands, hence the name, and has met every year since then. The location changes every year, but is usually a five-star hotel with a good golf course. The guest list is always impressive. At the May 2005 meeting in Germany, it included the heads of the World Bank and European Central Bank, chairmen or chief executives from Nokia, BP, Unilever, Daimler Chrysler and Pepsi, among other multinational corporations, editors from five major newspapers,
members of Parliament, ministers, European commissioners, the Crown Prince of Belgium and the Queen of the Netherlands. The Secretary-General of Bilderberg, who is also chairman of the giant agribusiness corporation Syngenta, is Martin Taylor. He says it's not hard to get such people to come.
People are attracted, I think, by sheer curiosity at being in a group like this and hearing certain things from the horse's mouth, as it were. People have a chance to get to know each other as individuals rather than as people that they come across in their government or business careers.
Will Hutton is an economic analyst and former newspaper editor who attended a Bilderberg meeting in 1997. He says people take part in these networks in order to influence the way the world works, to create what he calls the international common sense about policy.
You get access to other decision makers, you get an opportunity to play a part in and find out what the common sense is. So on every issue that might influence your business, the oil price, the state of regulation, and what's going to happen to tariffs, you'll hear at first hand the people who are actually making the decisions, and you'll play a part in helping them make those decisions and formulating the kind of common sense. Now, sometimes the common sense is right and sometimes the common sense is wrong, but you can't deny that there is such a thing.
Bilderberg's chairman, Viscount Davignon, plays down the impact of the meetings, saying they don't end with formal conclusions, but he agrees they can shape the international debate on an issue.
What can come out of it is that it is wrong not to deal with the problem. So you should go home, encourage people in any case not to leave the issue on the table without trying to do something about it. But the real consensus with action plan 1, 2, 3, the answer is no. People are much too sensible to believe that they can do that.
But the people who attend meetings of Bilderberg and other networks often are the people who, in their professional capacities, do draw up action plans to maintain economic growth and tackle global problems. Kees van der Peil believes networks like Bilderberg help to reconcile contradictory interests among the elite.
There need to be places where people at this level can coordinate more or less where they think policy should be going. What are the main challenges ahead, and can there be a consensus about handling them? There's no center in such a meeting. There's nobody there who already knows all the answers. It's really a sort of fact-finding meeting.
The Bilderberg chairman readily admits that the kind of consensus likely to be formed in his network is one which supports the interests of its main participants: transatlantic cooperation, European integration, and in particular free trade and the role of the World Trade Organization.
Automatically around the table you have internationalists. And from an internationalist point of view, you need to have a degree of rules which create a degree of confidence that you go and invest somewhere or organize a relation somewhere. If it works badly, you have somebody who's going to say what is right or wrong, and I think there the consensus was always very powerful.
One significant feature of Bilderberg guest lists is that they often feature future political leaders shortly before they become household names. Bill Clinton went in 1991 while he was still governor of Arkansas. Tony Blair was there 2 years later while still an opposition MP. All the recent presidents of the European Commission attended Bilderberg meetings before they were appointed. All this has led to accusations that the group pushes its favoured politicians into high office. But the Bilderberg chairman says his steering committee are simply excellent talent spotters.
When you ask a German to say, who do you think would be interested and is going places in German politics, well, he will do his best assessment of what are the bright new boys or the bright new girl who are in the beginning phase of their career, would like also to get known, and the other people would like to know them. And so it's not a total accident, but it is not a forecast. And if they go places, it's not because of Bilderberg, it's because of themselves.
But its critics say Bilderberg's selection process gives an extra boost to aspiring politicians whose views are friendly to big business. They're given access to an informal network which could help them recruit advisers, raise funds, and smooth the path to political success. None of this, however, is easy to prove or disprove. Indeed, an odd thing about Bilderberg is that while its critics think the meetings are enormously important, the participants, including the chairman, play down their significance.
I think it's not a global ruling class, because I don't think a global ruling class exists. I simply think that it is people who have influence and who are interested to speak with other people who have influence.
Martin Wolf of the Financial Times, and a frequent Bilderberg participant, thinks the meetings are a relatively small factor in a much larger dynamic.
It's incredibly difficult, I think, to identify the role in the dissemination of ideas and attitudes of groupings of this kind. But my own guess, actually, is that they're very, very minor. I think they tend to echo the ideas that have been generated elsewhere, often by intellectuals, rather than actually generate them.
But Will Hutton argues that the importance of informal networks of politicians and business people in policymaking is growing, particularly in Asia, and that these personal contacts are becoming more important even than groups such as Bilderberg.
I think there's no question that it's those informal networks that have persuaded the Chinese that have got to act in getting the North Koreans to abandon their nuclear weapon program, and that is the upside of it. But how that conversation took place, what quid pro quo the Americans have offered for it, we will never know.
Observers like Will Hutton argue that such private networks have both good and bad sides. They're unaccountable to voters, but at the same time they do keep the international system functioning. And there are limits to their power, a point on which both the chairman of Bilderberg and one of his critics, Professor van der Pyl, have reached the same conclusion.
Very often, when I am said this is a kind of secret government of the world, I say if we were a secret government of the world, we should be bloody ashamed of ourselves.
Rule today is very sophisticated, it's very well organized, but they haven't come much closer to solutions to, let's say, global warming, etc. So in that sense, it's a paradox. The machine of government and the machine of the ruling class has become so sophisticated, but it also has become, in a way, more powerless than ever before.
Informal and private networks like Bilderberg have helped to oil the wheels of global politics and globalization for the past half a century. In the eyes of critics, they've undermined democracy, but their supporters believe they're crucial to modern democracy's success. And so long as business and politics remain mutually dependent, they will continue to thrive.
And that programme was written and presented by Bill Hayton. In tomorrow's programme, the last of the series, Magdi Abdelhadi will report on the power and influence of Arab satellite news channels. That's tomorrow at the same time. Now, if you've been enjoying our season, Who Runs Your World, we've a special website. It's at bbcnews.com/yourworld. You can read articles and have your say on the subject. That's at bbcnews.com/yourworld. Stay tuned for all the main news.